Welcome back, everyone. Today we're going deep into the world of well, it's a bit of a surprising topic, honestly.
Surprising, yeah. But really important. We're talking about double counting, and not the kind you do with, cookies or anything. This is double counting in software engineering research.
Double counting research. Okay, now I'm intrigued. I have to admit, it doesn't sound quite as exciting as, say, artificial intelligence or self-driving cars.
Oh, but it is. Trust me. It can actually have a huge impact on all those things, even on how safe and reliable our technology is.
All right, you've got my attention. So, what exactly are we diving into today?
We're going to be exploring a paper called, let me get it right, Double Counting in Software Engineering Tertiary Studies, an Overleaked Threat to Validity.
Tertiary studies, so like college level stuff.
Kind of, but think of it more like a research pyramid. You have the foundational studies, those are the primary ones. Then researchers analyze those in secondary studies, kind of like summarizing a bunch of experiments. And then you have tertiary studies, which analyze the secondary studies.
Okay, so it's research about other research. Seems a bit, I don't know, meta.
Exactly, but that's where the problem comes in. Sometimes those tertiary studies end up counting the same research multiple times without even realizing it.
Like accidentally adding the same ingredient twice when you're baking? You might end up with a cake, but the flavor's gonna be way off.
Perfect analogy. And in the case of research, it can really skew the results and lead to misleading conclusions. Imagine, relying on a study about a new medicine, but the positive results are inflated because some of the data was counted twice or even more times.
That's a bit unsettling. Okay, so tell me more about this paper. What did they find?
Well, the researchers analyzed, get this, 47 tertiary studies in software engineering. And what they uncovered is pretty alarming.
47 studies. Is that a lot? It doesn't seem like a huge sample size.
It's not massive, true. But the results were pretty consistent, which is concerning. Nearly half of those studies showed some level of potential bias because of double counting. And I'm not talking about a small margin of error here. This was enough to potentially change the conclusions of those studies.
Whoa, okay. So, how does this double counting happen? Are researchers literally copying and pasting each other's work?
Sometimes, yeah, that definitely happens. It's called duplicate studies.
Yeah.
But there are other ways it can sneak in. Sometimes a newer study basically makes an older one obsolete, but both get included. Redundance studies, they call that.
Okay, so far so good. But it sounds easy enough to catch those kinds of duplicates.
Sure, those are the more obvious ones. But the trickiest type is what they call overlap of primary studies. This is where multiple studies all rely on the same pool of original research.
So it's like a game of telephone where the original message gets distorted as it gets passed along.
Exactly. And here's the kicker. That original message, that primary research, might not even be that good to begin with. But if it's cited by multiple secondary studies, those flawed findings get amplified. And if a tertiary study comes along and doesn't account for that overlap, well, their conclusions could be way off.
I see. So it's not just about the number of studies, but also the quality of the research they're based on. Is there anything else that can cause these, you called them overlaps?
Yeah, there's this thing called overlap of primary data. It's when, several studies all use the same data set, but the tertiary study doesn't realize they're pulling from the same well, so to speak.
So, like making different soups, but always using the same stock as a base. You might think you're getting a variety of flavors, but they all have that same underlying essence.
Exactly. You've got it. It's crucial to know where the ingredients are coming from, whether we're talking soup or scientific research.
This is all starting to make me a bit uneasy, to be honest. Do you have any real-world examples of how this double counting has actually messed up, software engineering research?
Oh, plenty. There's one in the paper about test-driven development, TDD. Have you heard of that?
TDD. It rings a bell, but I'm not a coder, so give me the quick version.
Sure, it's the approach where you write tests for your code before you actually write the code itself.
Ah, okay. So it's a way to make sure the code does what it's supposed to from the get-go. All right, got it. So this study on PDD, what was the double counting issue there?
Well, they found that four different secondary studies, all looking at TDD, they all cited six of the same primary research papers. That's a lot of overlap, and it created a huge potential for bias.
So, like, almost half of their source material was the same. Seems like a pretty big problem.
It is. And to make matters worse, some of those shared studies were actually considered low quality by other researchers. But because they were counted multiple times, their results ended up having more weight than they deserved.
It's like having unreliable witnesses giving the same flawed testimony in a courtroom. it could totally sway the jury, even if other more credible evidence exists, right?
Exactly. It's a great analogy. And it means that even if there was good research supporting TDD, those less reliable studies might have made the overall findings less convincing.
And this is just one example. I imagine there are others.
Oh, yeah. This paper found similar issues in other areas of software engineering research, too. It's a pretty pervasive problem. And it really raises the question, if we can't trust the research, how can we make informed decisions about how we develop software?
That's a great point. This is way more serious than I initially thought. But it can't all be doom and gloom, right? Surely there's something that can be done about this double counting mess.
Absolutely. And the good news is the researchers who wrote this paper, they don't just point out the problem, they actually offer solutions.
Okay, I'm all ears. What are they? Is there a way to even measure this double counting problem to know, like, how bad it really is?
There is. They've developed a tool called the Corrected Covered Area, or CCA for short. It basically helps researchers quantify how much overlap exists between different studies. Think of it as a double counting detector.
I love it. A double counting detector, it's like something out of a detective novel.
Right. So the CCA gives you a percentage. The higher the percentage, the more overlap there is. If it's low, say under 10%, it's probably not a huge concern. But if it's over 25%, then you need to, proceed with caution.
So it's a warning system for researchers. Hey, there's a lot of overlap here. Be careful. I like it. But how does this CCA thing actually work? Like, what goes into that percentage score?
Well, it looks at the number of primary studies cited by each secondary study, and it calculates how much those citations overlap. It also takes into account the relative quality of those primary studies.
So it's not just quantity, but quality too. Interesting.
Right, because a small overlap of high-quality studies might not be a big deal, whereas a large overlap of, less reliable studies, that's a red flag.
Okay, so now we have a way to measure the problem, but how do we actually fix it? What can researchers do to address this double counting and make their work more reliable?
That's a great question, and one we'll definitely delve into. But you know what? I think we should take a quick break first and come back to those solutions fresh.
Sounds like a plan. We'll be right back after a short break. Okay, so before the break, we were getting into this, well, kind of a sticky situation with double counting in research, but you were about to tell us how researchers can actually tackle this problem.
Right. The researchers, they actually lay out a four-step process. Think of it like, I don't know, a recipe for more reliable research. And the first step is, well, it's a bit like cleaning house.
Cleaning house, what do you mean?
Well, you got to get rid of all the duplicates, any redundant studies like, cleaning out your pantry before you start cooking, get rid of the expired stuff, anything that's just taking up space.
Makes sense. Get rid of the clutter so you can focus on the good stuff. All right, what's step two?
Okay, step two is where things get a bit more detective-y. Researchers need to really look closely at the overlap between primary studies and decide if it's actually a problem.
So, not all overlap is bad. There are times when it's okay.
Exactly. Sometimes it makes sense for different studies to cite the same research, especially if it's, a really important study, a foundational one.
So, how do researchers know when that overlap is a problem then?
Well, it all comes down to the specific research question they're trying to answer. They need to think, okay, could this overlap be skewing things? Could it be introducing bias?
So, it's a judgment call. But once they've identified those potential problem areas, what then?
That's step three time, to break out that CCA tool we talked about. Quantify that overlap, put a number on it.
So, they run the numbers, get that percentage score, then what?
Well, then they got to make a decision. If the overlap is significant, like over 25%, then they need to think about how to mitigate it, how to address it.
So what does that look like? How do they actually deal with this double counting issue?
There are a few different approaches. One way is to adjust the analysis, maybe give more weight to studies that haven't been cited as often. Or they could go back to the original research, see if there are other studies they could include, to broaden the perspective a bit.
So it's all about being flexible and finding ways to balance things out.
Yeah, and being transparent. Researchers need to be upfront about the limitations of their study, explain how they handled any potential bias.
Right, transparency is key. Building trust with the reader, helping them understand the nuances of the research. But it sounds like this four-step process is mainly focused on fixing problems in those tertiary studies. Is there anything that can be done to prevent this double counting issue from happening in the first place?
Great question. And yes, the researchers, they suggest some changes to how those secondary studies, the ones that are being analyzed, how they were reported. It's like preventative medicine for research.
Okay, I like that analogy. So, what kind of changes are we talking about?
One big one, is to be more clear about any overlap between the studies being analyzed. Like, imagine you're reading a paper and there's this table listing all the primary studies they used.
Okay, I'm picturing it. What would make this table more, you know, double counting proof?
Well, they could add a little note next to each study, just saying whether or not it's been cited in other studies that are also being included in the analysis.
Ah, so you could see at a glance which studies are showing up in multiple places.
Exactly. It'd be like a little warning flag.
Yeah.
And to go even further, they could also include information about the quality of each primary study.
So you could see if the overlapping studies are, you know, the good ones or the ones that might be a bit iffy. Smart.
Right. It adds another layer of transparency, helps readers understand the potential for bias.
Makes a lot of sense. Any other suggestions for improving how these studies are reported?
Another idea is to give open access to the data used in the primary research. So other researchers, even the public, they could take a closer look at the data, see if there are any issues.
Okay, so more transparency, more open access. I like where this is going.
It's all about making the research process more open, collaborative, you know, accountable. And in the end, it's about making sure the software we all use is built on a solid foundation of reliable research. It affects us all.
This has been eye-opening. We've uncovered this hidden problem, this double counting issue, and we've talked about solutions. But I want to bring this back to our listeners who might not be researchers themselves. Why does all this matter to them? How does this affect their lives?
That's the key question, isn't it? We use software every day, right?
Yeah.
But we don't always think about all the research that goes into creating it.
We just expect it to work.
Exactly. Yeah. And we don't always think about what might happen if that research is flawed. But as we've seen today, it can have real consequences.
So we need to be more aware, more informed.
Absolutely. It's about being an engaged citizen when it comes to technology, asking questions, demanding transparency, holding developers and researchers accountable.
So it's not just about software. This whole idea of being critical consumers of information, that applies to everything, right?
100%. Think about the news, the products we buy, even the politicians we support. Everything is influenced by the information we're exposed to.
So what can we do? Should we all become like amateur detectives, scrutinizing every bit of information that comes our way?
Not necessarily. It's not about being suspicious of everything. It's more about, you know, cultivating a healthy skepticism, being willing to ask questions.
Okay, so what's the first question we should be asking ourselves when we come across a new piece of information?
One good one is, who's telling me this?
Mm-hmm.
And why are they telling me this? Understanding the source, their motivations, it can help you figure out if the information is credible.
So if I'm reading a study about, let's say, a new weight loss supplement, I should probably consider who funded that research, right? Was it the company that makes the supplement?
Exactly. It doesn't mean the research is automatically wrong, but it's something to keep in mind. Look for those potential conflicts of interest.
Okay, so we got to think about the source. What else? What else should we be looking for?
Evidence. What kind of data supports the claims they're making? Is it solid research or just, you know, anecdotes, opinions?
And if it is research, we can apply what we've learned today. Look for those double counting red flags.
Absolutely. Look for transparency in how the research was done, how it was reported. Do they talk about limitations? Do they explain their methods?
And if you're really feeling ambitious, you could even try to track down some of the original sources, see if they hold up.
Now you're talking. That's the spirit.
Well, I've had a great teacher today. This deep dive has been fascinating. We've uncovered this hidden problem in software engineering research, but it's given us tools we can use in all areas of life.
It's all about being informed, being discerning.
And remember, dear listeners, if you're ever feeling overwhelmed by all the information out there, just take a breath, put on your detective hat, and ask, what's the evidence?
Love it. And if you're looking for more clues to help you solve the mysteries of the world, be sure to check out the show notes for a link to the research paper we've been discussing.
It's a good read, even if you're not a software engineer. And we've got more deep dives coming up, so be sure to subscribe and stay tuned. Until next time, keep those detective hats handy and keep exploring the world with curiosity and a critical eye. It really makes you think, doesn't it? About how much we just accept as fact without really questioning it.
It's easy to do, especially now with so much information coming at us all the time.
Right. Like, how do we even know what to trust anymore? This whole deep dive has really made me rethink how I look at research, but it also makes me think about other areas of life too, not just software.
Oh, absolutely. It's relevant to everything. The news, the products we buy, the politicians we vote for. So much of it comes down to, well, the information we're exposed to and whether we believe it.
So are you saying we should all be like super skeptical about everything, walk around questioning everything we hear?
Not exactly. It's not about being cynical. It's more about, you know, healthy skepticism. Being aware that bias exists. Being willing to dig a little deeper.
Okay, so how do we do that? What's the first step to becoming more discerning consumers of information?
I always start by asking, who's telling me this and why? Because once you understand the source of the information, their motivations, it can really help you assess, you know, how credible it is.
Right. So if I'm reading a study about, say, the benefits of some new diet, I should think about who funded that study. Was it like the company that sells the diet program?
Exactly. It doesn't mean the study is automatically wrong, but it's a factor. Always look for potential conflicts of interest.
Okay, so source is important. What else should we be paying attention to?
Evidence. Evidence. What kind of data are they using to back up their claims? Is it solid research or is it just anecdotes, opinions, you know?
And if it is research, we can use what we've learned today. Be on the lookout for those double counting red flags.
Definitely. Look for transparency. Do the authors explain their methods clearly? Do they acknowledge any limitations in their research?
And if you're really feeling up to it, you could even try to track down some of those original sources they're citing. See if they hold up.
Now you're thinking like a researcher.
Well, I've had a great teacher. This has been such a fascinating deep dive. We started with this, I gotta admit, kind of a wonky topic, double counting in software engineering research. But it's really opened up a whole new way of thinking about information in general.
It's all connected, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, I think the biggest takeaway for me and hopefully for our listeners is that we all have the power to be more critical, more informed. We don't have to just passively absorb whatever information comes our way.
We can be active participants. We can ask questions. We can demand evidence.
Exactly. And to our listeners, if you're ever feeling overwhelmed by all the information out there, just remember what we talked about today. Take a deep breath, put on your detective hat, and ask yourself, what's the evidence?
Love it. And if you're looking for more clues to help you navigate this crazy world of information, be sure to check out the show notes for a link to the research paper we discussed.
It's a fascinating read, even if you're not a software engineer, I promise. And of course, we've got a whole lineup of exciting deep dives coming up, so be sure to subscribe and stay tuned. Until next time, keep those detective hats handy and keep exploring the world with curiosity and a critical eye.